another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hello, this is Jack Spirka with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world and the changing times and the things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Well, folks, I told you today that I was going to talk about developing a survival mindset, that I was going to get off of the bailout and go into how to think, how to act, how to be a survivor in the modern world. Not so much how to survive out in the middle of the mountains, but how to survive economically and physically in the world that we're in today. Living up to the show credo, how do you do this? How do you make sure that you're living the life you really want if times get tough or even if they don't? That's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to start out with just a real quick note on this bailout, what happened yesterday, just because it's so important and because it's got so many people thinking about, well, what the hell am I going to do? But don't let it scare you. We're not having another bailout show or economy show or anything like that. This is going to be practical, down to earth, and how to think like a survivor. The reason I'm going to talk about how to think is because I really can't tell you what to do. Because you live wherever you live. Your financial situation is whatever your financial situation is. Your income is whatever your income is. Your potential for more income is whatever your potential for more income is. Your debt is whatever your debt is. Your willingness or unwillingness to sacrifice in certain areas is your own. Everything about you is unique. Everything about you makes you an individual, and everything about your family is unique and is, you know, directly applicable to you, your individual family. So if I start saying, step one, do this, step two, do that, step three, do this, and say this is how to put your home in order, well, I'm giving a generic prescription to a completely diverse group of individuals, which doesn't work, which is why we have such, you know, failures in modern medicine and modern education. So, you know, I'm not going to repeat that stupidity. I'm going to, you know, here, like I've always said, it's about trying to help you figure out how to live a better life and help you figure out how to make your individual life better if times get tough or even if they don't. So that's how I'm going to present this today. Just a real quick thing, though, on the bailout. A lot of people are looking around going, what happened? What happened? Well, I think one is that people like yourselves that called their representative and said, don't you do this thing. If you do this, you know, November's not that far away. We won't forget. You will be fired. I think that had an impact. But I think a lot of this was orchestrated. Nancy Pelosi told about 30 of her own people not to vote yes on this thing because it would put their positions in jeopardy. They might lose the election. So she brought enough Democrats to show that she did her part to the table with her. And most of the Republicans were ready to go, and this thing very narrowly failed. But right before they took a vote, she came out with a scathing beating on Republicans, and once again reasserted that, hey, the Democrats didn't do this, the Republicans did this, this was abused by the Congress under the Republicans, abused by the Republican president, and this is the result, and now we have to clean it up, and it's all your fault. Well, not surprisingly, a few people were really on the fence and kind of signed on to this thing, but weren't really hip about it. They knew they were risking their jobs when they did it, and were doing it because they thought they needed to, said, you know what? No. No, 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 no. You're not going to turn this into a political stunt there, Ms. Pelosi. I'm not going to put my neck out on the line so that you can come out of this thing smelling like a rose, protect your people, get what you want, and you know, gain all the power that you're going to get from this social grab, which is what this thing really is, as I've explained before. I'm not going to do that for you. So the vote failed. Well, then what happened? Well, exactly what I said would happen the minute that there was any indication this deal wasn't going to happen. The stock market tumbled. So when I said it would tumble Friday and it didn't, and you said, where's the tumble? Here it is. All right? As soon as the deal wasn't a done deal in people's minds, the stock market tumbled. What do I think will happen next? I think they'll come up with a deal. I think the American people will accept it this time. Maybe. Because what's going on right now? Well, Dow futures, because the market hasn't opened up yet as of this podcast, but Dow futures are currently up 200 points. Well, what the heck's going on? How's the market going to go up today? Well, it dropped ridiculously yesterday. It dropped way too much, even with the problems that are there, because companies that build trucks and companies that create, you know, are in agriculture and companies that deliver food to grocery stores and all these other companies whose stocks got beaten up in this downturn that's all about the financial markets, their companies are still in good shape and they're still good. They're still financially decent, right? So what people are doing today is they're going in and they're buying these stocks on sale. So people aren't buying, you know, companies that are solid, that have good balance sheets today. And you'll see the market go up a couple hundred points. So you won't see this all come back. But you're going to see a rebound today. The market will end up above where it is today, most likely. Again, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but just kind of the way I see this stuff. So that's what happened. So, you know, that leads us into this psychology of being a survivor, this survival mindset. And, you know, the basic question is, what should you do now that this happened, now that this market just tumbled almost 800 points in a day? Number one, don't panic. There is no need for you to do anything today any different than you did it yesterday or the day before, all right? The fact that you're paying attention at all puts you miles ahead of most people. So there's no reason to panic about this. But the other side of that is don't bury your head in the sand. Don't get ostrich syndrome, all right? This is a real problem. And what people don't realize, and, you know, this Nancy Pelosi idiot came out here. God, you know, I try not to be partisan here, but this is not partisan. This woman is mind-numbingly stupid with some of the statements that she makes. All right. I don't know how you people in California keep electing this idiot. I don't care if she's a Democrat or a Republican or whatever. Anybody that talks like this person should not be sent to Congress, let alone be the Speaker of the House. It's ridiculous. All right. But this pinhead comes out and says the crisis is still with us because these Republicans blocked it. Right? You know, ignoring how many of her own party voted against this thing, too, because it was wickedly unpopular with people. All right. If they voted this thing in, the crisis would still be with us. For her to come out and say that is ignoring the reality here, folks. The crisis is with us for a long time right now. But the biggest concern is that people won't be able to borrow money and continue to go deeper in debt. Well, as I go through what you need to be doing for yourself right now, you're going to see that what I'm going to tell you is the last thing you need right now is more debt anyway. All right? So I don't see that as a problem. I see that part of the market correcting itself. There's been too much lending, too much credit, too much debt. When you do that long enough, the market says, because this is a free market by and large still, despite all the socialization that's happened to it, when you do that for too long, the market works. It goes, wait a minute, this doesn't work. And the market forces come in and say, okay, this lending has to stop. Right? There's no governing body, no one comes in and does it, no overlords, nothing. It's just simple, all right? It's broken, it has to fix itself. That's how free markets work. So, as we look at what a survival mindset is, how we live a better life, whether times get tougher, even if they don't, the first thing we need to do is come deeply in touch with what survival means. All right. And part of why people that are open to the fact that society could break down and we could have a complete, total financial, economic collapse, moral collapse, legal collapse, society boiled down to its basal elements with people looting and stealing and robbing. Part of why those people are better suited to survive, even if nothing like that ever happens, is because they're open to the reality that it could, and it puts them in touch with what survive means. Survive doesn't mean live like a king. Survive simply means to continue to exist. As long as you continue to exist, you are surviving. Right? Now that wasn't good enough for me. Alright? So I want to continue to exist in a way that makes me feel good and happy no matter what happens. Hence, live the life you want if times get tough or even if they do not. Alright? That's where my definition got expanded. that we can't just continue because you can continue in a jail cell. To me, that's not really surviving, but in a way that it is. And that'll put us in touch with how many things we think we need that we don't, and that's going to help us as we look at ways to make ourselves more wealthy. I'm going to give you a definition of wealth toward the end of today's show that's going to change the way you think about wealth. And the way you think about people that are truly wealthy, because it's not going to be about how many dollars you really have in total. It's not going to be anything like what you generally think of wealth. But if I'm going to get there with you and we're going to understand each other when we get there, then you're going to have to go through this process with me. And we have to start with survival is to continue to exist. And I want you to think right now for yourself. If we had the total breakdown in society, right? What would you be happy to still have, right? What if you were able to find that place out in the boonies, right? And you were able to have enough food to have a full belly, maybe not live on lobster thermidor, right? But you were able to have a full belly, and you were able to know what was going on around you through ham or whatever was left of the television networks or whatever. If you were able to keep people from coming and taking what you have, all right, and you were able to know that the people that you loved and care about were in a similar situation or with you, would that be enough? And almost everybody with a survival mentality, when you ask them that question, says, of course it would. The life that you really want, if times get tough, or even if they don't, that is where its root is. Now, I'm not saying that you need to go start living to that level of without today. But it sure starts to make a lot of things that you think you need decline in reality for you. And as you do that, you can begin to move through a process of solidifying your life and increasing true wealth. All right? The first thing that you need to do is get a handle on your expenses and cut expenses. And I'm going to give you good news. The first cut is going to be 100% mental. You're not actually going to do it. All right? So when you do it the first time, you're going to be malicious. You're going to be like a new chief financial officer that came in to oversee your family. If it's possible to cut it, you're going to cut it on paper. So the only way you're going to be able to do that is first determine where all the money goes. So this is my challenge for everybody listening to this that keeps saying, give us more practical things we can do. I'm going to give you a completely cheap way. All right, you're going to need to spend about a quarter if you don't already have a notebook. All right, to go buy a notebook. Doesn't have to be a great notebook. If you already have a notebook, use what you have. It'll cost you nothing except the ink or the lead from a pencil that you use doing this. All right, so there's no excuses here. For the next 14 days, write down every dime you spend. I don't care if the kid wants a bubble gum and you put a quarter in the machine, write it down. Write down every single, they call it your spending journal. And I'm challenging you to do it for at least 14 days, but you should do it at least for 30. I'm saying 14 because I'm going to want you to take the slicing, cutting step at 14, but I'm going to want you to do it again at 30. So I want you to write down everything you spend, okay? And if you normally spend it, go ahead and spend it for the next 14 days. It ain't going to kill you, all right? And write it down. When you get done with that, all right, I want you to go through it. And I want you with a red pen, so maybe you got to spend another 50 cents to get a red pen if you don't have one. And I want you to mark everything you don't have to spend money on with a red pen. I want you to cut it. I want you to cut it with no emotion whatsoever. Remember, you're not actually doing it yet, okay? Not everything you put a red line through are you going to then never spend money on again. This is a mental exercise to get you into survival mindset. All right? So be absolutely, positively malicious with your cutting. If people will continue to live, if the lights will stay on in the home, if the bank won't repossess something, cut it. If it's not going to make you starve and live on mealy porridge, cut it. Cut it all. Add it up. See how much it is. Even though I want you to keep doing it for a month because expenses change throughout the month, double it and consider that's what you could save a month if you had to right now. Let the number sink in. Let the number sink in after you do that. All right? And then go back and figure out how much of it you were really willing to cut. And after you figure out what you're really willing to cut, run your budget for 30 days that way with all those things cut out of it. All right? And the first time you do this, cut one or two items that you marked with red, but you really wish you didn't have to cut. Just one or two. And at the end of that month, see if it really hurts you. If it did, you can put it back. If it didn't, leave it out. A lot of times this is like quitting cigarettes. The first 2 weeks, you're jittery and nerves, and after 30 days, you could care less. All right? So at least give it a chance. Give it a trial. If you put something back in, try to pick something else to take out. Constantly work on that. Keep that spending journal. I'll challenge you to keep that spending journal for 60 or 90 days. It'll really change how much money you spend. It'll really start keeping more money in your household. All right. For many people, it's far easier to decrease spending than to just go out and increase income. Most people's income, they talk about old people living on fixed incomes, most people are on a salary. They don't have a bonus schedule or a commission schedule or anything like that. And even if they do, it's limited to how much that can account for. So most people have fixed incomes. So usually it's easier to reduce debt. Not that increasing income's not important. I'll talk about that in a second. But that's just where to start with. Okay. Now, the other thing you need to be doing now, more than you've ever needed to before, is paying off your debt. And I'm going to give you a real quick rundown and overview of what they call the debt snowball. And Dave Ramsey kind of is the guy that's really marketed this thing. Don't attribute Dave too much. Dave didn't come up with this thing. Dave was just a brilliant marketer. And he grabbed onto this one concept, and he's pushed it, and he's pushed it, and he's pushed it, and he's made it his own, and he's packaged it beautifully. And because of that, he's reached a lot of people, so he's done very good with it. But this existed a long time ago. The first time I got myself out of debt, and it was too little of a debt to stick with me and teach me not to go back into it. It's exactly what I did, and no one told me to do it because it just makes perfect sense. Here's how this works if you've never heard it before. What you do is you look at all your debts, and let's say you have three debts. You have a car with $10,000 on it, you have a credit card with $5,000 on it, and you have a medical bill with $1,000 on it. Now, what most people try to do when they're trying to get out of that debt, we're looking at $16,000 worth of debt right there, is they pay a little extra on all three bills. And that is like using a shotgun when you should be using a rifle or a laser beam instead. All right? You're distributing your extra power uniformly across an ununiform obstacle. In other words, if you were fighting a battle here, you're taking pop shots at three enemies. When one enemy is closest to you and easiest to kill, you should kill him first. So you kill that debt first. So you take that smallest bill, that $1,000 medical bill, and you scrape up all this money you've saved, right? Except for whatever you put into savings, because you should be putting some money into savings too. But you scrape up every bit of extra money you can find, and you put it on this $1,000 debt, all right? And what will happen is you'll actually pay that $1,000 off very, very quickly, okay? Because it's not that big of a bill. You get a tremendous psychological boost when you pay that off. You feel like you've accomplished something. Don't party when you pay it off, all right? You know, go have a latte at Starbucks as a reward. One $4 coffee won't kill you. Immediately then, take all the money that you were paying on the $1,000 debt, move it to the $5,000 debt, and start paying on the $5,000. Right, and now you're compounding your payment because you're taking the extra from the $1,000, all the money that was paying the base rate of the $1,000, the minimum payment you had to make, okay? And you're applying that on top of the money you're already paying to the $5,000 debt. That debt will come down remarkably fast, faster than you can really imagine, especially if you're really cutting your expenses and really applying all of your earning power that you can afford to toward getting out of that debt, all right? Now, once that $5,000 debt is paid off, you have the two bills combined, plus the extra money that you've been paying on that $6,000 worth of debt. That'll be a much larger figure than it was when you were applying it to the $1,000 worth of debt. You take that over to the $10,000 you owe on the car, which just by paying the base loan rate, you've already probably dropped during this period to $9,000 or $8,000, okay? Because you're still paying your other bills. You're just paying the minimum payment on your other bills. Now you take all of that compounded on top of that. You'll pay that car off in like 6 months or less, believe it or not. If you keep dividing up your extra power across those three, you'll stay in debt for a maximum amount of time, and because you're not reducing your debt, you'll probably continue to grow your debt through other means, and you'll keep getting deeper and deeper in the hole instead of digging out of it. When is the time to start this process? Today. if you haven't already. Period. End of story. So that's a debt snowball. If you want to know more about that, check out DaveRamsey.com. Listen to his radio show that's on every day. I think you can listen to an hour of it for free on a podcast he does off his website. Good guy, but I'm going to tell you a secret here, folks. This guy has a show every day longer than mine, and pretty much what I told you is he just keeps repeating it over and over. People call in, I got this, I got that, I got this. Hey, do this, right? I got this, I got that, I got this. Do the same thing. Right? People call in and go, but my interest rate on my $10,000 debt is 17%, and my interest rate on my $5,000 debt is 4%. So I should pay off the bigger debt first. No, pay off the smaller debt first. You'll pay it off faster. Okay? Interest rate is meaningless here. It's how fast can you kill the enemy. All of these debts are like enemies coming at you, trying to shoot you. The closest one that you can draw a bead on the fastest, kill him. Kill him and then turn to the second closest and kill him, right? Because the interesting thing is these enemies are advancing, so by the time you turn to the third enemy, he's closer and much easier to kill. And you don't have to worry about taking shots from your flank. That's how debt works. It's like an enemy trying to kill you. Mortgage actually means death grip. Mort for mortality, gauge for grip. To be under the grip of death. So once you pay off all that debt, start working on paying the mortgage down. Even if the value of your house slips in value, the fact that you have greater equity will help you if you decide you want to move. You go, but I lost money when I moved. Not if you go out and buy while the market's down. Because when you replace it with a property that's more of what you want, while it's depressed in value as well, you get an even exchange. That's the wonderful thing about real estate. But as long as you're upside down on your mortgage and you owe more than you can sell your house for, you end up stuck into those situations. So pay the debt down. Pay it down. See it as the most evil thing in your life. Hate it more than you hate the worst person you can think of in politics, the Federal Reserve, and somebody coming to try to take away your liberty all at the same time. Despise debt. Hate it. Your grandparents did, and they were a hell of a lot smarter than we are because they thought that way. All right? Neither a borrower nor a lender be, folks. It's Shakespeare. It's hundreds of years old. It's timeless wisdom. It's time that we embrace it. And that is one of the biggest things we can do to have a proper survival mindset. Okay, the next one I'm going to give you might even sound like a little bit New Age-ish, I guess, is the way that some people might see it. It's not. It is an important exercise, though, and here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn ahead 50 pages in that notebook that you're doing your spending journal in, at least. And I want you to write what your ideal life is down. And I want you to work on it over several days. I want you to take your time to get there. I think this would actually be interesting as you develop this. And if you want to do it on a computer, do it on a computer. Maybe people would be willing to share what that ideal life is on the forum. I'll see if I can set up a thread somewhere, see which board is maybe best for doing that. And as we start to develop these things, share with each other what you really want. All right, and I think what you're going to find is that very few people are going to want two Ferraris and a Maserati. Like, people that want those things think differently than we do. And it's not that you can't be extremely wealthy and not want a Ferrari, but the people that need those status symbols generally have emotional issues that they're trying to compensate for. I want you to think about it this way. If you opened your door tomorrow, and out on the doorstep was a suitcase, and on top of the suitcase was a note, and it said, "Dear first name, whoever, you know, whoever your first name is, I've observed that you are a great person, worthy of great things. I want you to have the life you really want. I don't want you to worry about what other people have as far as the life they want. I have one condition for you if you take the money in the suitcase, and that would be that you live the life you want first, and once you set up the life you want, if you want to help other people, do it then. Inside this suitcase, you will find $2 million. I've already reported it to the IRS for you, and I've already paid your taxes on it. This is your money, free and clear. Please do with it as you like, as you see fit. Remember only that you must do what you want for yourself first. I want you to get that in your head. I want you to visualize that money, and I want you to write what kind of life you would build for yourself. And I bet you it won't take half of the money to do it. I bet you even if I gave you $2 million, you don't need it all. I bet you most people would go out and find themselves a home for under $200,000 with a big piece of land. Most of you listen to the show anyway. They would set up as much independence as they can for themselves. They would ensure that their family is going to be taken care of, their immediate family that lives with them in their home. And they would immediately, most people would stop working every day at a job that they hate. And they would go out and they would figure out what they really love, and they would do that. I want you to write that story as though it already exists. That will give you something to work for. That will make you more willing to obey the red pen when you went through your spending journal and started cutting, because you know what you're trying to accomplish. And husbands or wives that are trying to get the spouse on board, do this exercise with them. Form a common vision. And you will give yourself an immense amount of power to work toward that goal. And what you'll realize is you don't need $2 million to do it. And that most likely, even with the economy sucking butt the way that it is right now, you can probably get there in a lot shorter time than you ever thought. You don't have to wait till you're 65 or 73 and on Social Security and you're dead to have that life. If you really know what it is, and if that becomes the objective that you're working towards, and if you think about it, again, back into it like a tactical situation, if you were going to go out and try to take over an enemy headquarters, you wouldn't worry about farting around with anything else. Everything that you did, every action that you took would be derived to get into that headquarters and take it over. See your life goal that way. Everything you do should be building toward that eventual life. As Dave Ramsey says, to give him credit, live like no one else will today so you can live like no one else can tomorrow. That's, but I'm giving you a way to crystallize it. I'm giving you a way to make it real. I'm giving you a way to put it into your head. When you commit things to paper, when you write them down, they become 100 times more real. There's been countless studies done that executives, business people, college graduates that have written goals go way further in life than those without them. All right? This is using that fact a different way. So it's really important to find what you really want. Figure it out and start working toward that. If you look at something you're going to do and it doesn't get you closer to it, really ask yourself, do we need to do this? Should we be doing this? Could we use the resources, money, or time to do something else that would get us closer to our true objective, what we really want, so we can live the life we want if times get tough or even if they don't? That's how simple this is. That's the reality. That's how you focus it. The other thing that you need to look at, is there any way that you can increase income? Because any way that you can use to increase your income can be used to pay down debt or get yourself into enough savings, enough wealth, enough opportunity, enough freedom to be able to go out and live that life sooner. Okay? Very, very simple. More money is better. Now, as I said before, that's hard for some people, but there's lots of options out there. I guarantee you, even with the recession, people are still buying pizza. Some people would say, I'm not going to deliver pizza. Folks, I understand. I'm not going to deliver pizza. My point is, that's just one way that more money can be earned. There's lots of ways out there. People do things like I do and set up little websites that generate income. There's plenty of ways to do that. I'm not going to try to, you know, sell you on some kind of guru system or something like that. There's tons of opportunity out there. There are, you know, one of the things that I can see a person developing and making money with today is if you have any kind of skill. I don't care if it's how to frame a house. I don't care if it's how to be a good handyman, how to grow vegetables, how to cook. And I don't just mean survival cooking. I think get your head out of just survival. That's only one niche that's out there. There's billions of niches. And if you just went out and got a $100 camera and started making YouTube videos of how to do the things that you do, set up your own YouTube channel. All of this is free. And get huge numbers of people subscribe to your channel. Make friends, go out and exchange information, get ideas, publish links to your YouTube channel on any forums related to what you're doing, and build up a show, kind of like I'm doing, but do a video show, and make your YouTube's going to limit you to 10 minutes anyway. Quick how-to, down and dirty, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. You get enough eyeballs on you, people will pay for you to endorse their products. Right? The more people you know, the more opinion you control, the more money you earn. That's just one idea. There's thousands of ways to make more money, and they go from being an internet entrepreneur down to being a pizza delivery man. And, you know, one puts more long-term income in your pocket, but the other one's immediate. All right? If you went out and got a job delivering pizzas today, you start taking cash tips and putting them in your pocket tomorrow. And that can go toward this. So you have to decide what's right for you, whether it's overtime. A lot of people are going to be cutting back on that. So if you had overtime, you may look at ways to replace it. My only point is there any way you can increase your income? And if you can, consider very seriously doing whatever it takes to get it done, to be able to do it, to make sacrifices in some instances, to work harder than you ought to at sometimes. Sometimes it's only a temporary time. You know, you're only going to do this for 2 months a year, whatever. If you can increase your income and put 100% of the increase either into savings or debt reduction, and commit it to that. If you can survive without it today, you don't need it. So only go get it to do things to get you closer to the goal that you've solidified in your mind, that life you really want. Okay? It sounds simple. It sounds so stupidly simple, you almost wonder, can it be this simple and work? It is this simple, and it does work, and thousands of people have already done it. And your grandparents did it without a journal. Okay? They decided, I want a home. I want a safe place to raise my family. I want a garden in the backyard. Or whatever it is they wanted, and they did it. They just went out and did it because it was the number one thing that they focused on. They didn't care if the neighbor got a new freaking car. They didn't run out and buy one on credit, too. They didn't even know what the hell a credit card was. They didn't have health insurance. They didn't have medical insurance. Okay? They didn't have any of that crap. They just did what they needed to do to continue to exist and to improve the quality of life that they had at the level where it really mattered. And if you gave them the income that most of us have today, even adjusted for inflation, they would be some of the wealthiest people in the world by the time that they died, living the way that they lived, and you can do the same thing. All right? We're going to get into what real wealth really is here in just a second. So what do you think about that? If you gave your grandfather, or more aptly, your great-grandfather, the income you have today, adjusted for inflation, so that it's not like, well, you know, $1,000 was a ton of money in 1908. And $1,000 today isn't that much. No, no, no. Just if you adjusted it for inflation and gave him your income, because he probably made nothing. And he lived the way he did then with that kind of income and continued to save, invest, and build his wealth with it. How wealthy would he have been by the time that he died? Or if he's still with you, how wealthy would he be today? It'll make you really realize the opportunity that so much of us squander today. All right? And so, you know, just really think about that as you apply everything you can do towards reaching your eventual goal. You know, the next thing you really need to do is define your needs. And as, if you've worked the process this far, you really will have already done a lot of that. But start really realizing, what do you need? If we had the apocalypse, and you had to survive, well, what would you really need? And anything that's outside of those needs is a want. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't have them. Folks, I've admitted that I spend money on things that I don't need. I have a 50-inch TV. I didn't need that. But I understood that I didn't need it. I didn't justify needing it, and I didn't buy it on credit. All right? And, you know, do you need a new car? Do you really need a new car? Well, a new car gets 35 miles to the gallon. I'll save money on gas. But the old car is paid for. It gets 20 miles to the gallon. I promise you, even with $4 gas, you're spending less money with the old car, as long as it gets you where you need to go. Maybe you need to find a better old used car. You can buy cash. Just really think about every expenditure. Do I need this or do I want this? And make yourself wait longer when you want it. You're going to find that 90% of what you spend money on, outside of paying the electric bill, the mortgage, putting gas in the car, outside of that, 90% of the money you spend is for wants, not needs. So really think about, do I need this or do I want this? And is this the right way to spend my money? The next one may shock you a little bit with how much time I've put into explaining the economy in past shows, how much time I've taken to explain this bailout, how it's going to work. And that is, understand the economy, okay? But exist outside of it. You need to understand the economy so you know the dangers that you're going to face. So you don't sit there while a Mack truck bears down on you, and you leave all your money in your 401k all this year inside of high-risk funds, and now you've taken a bath, right? You don't need to be that oblivious. But if you use good, solid investing strategies, if you invest in companies that have a proven track record of making a profit, they are going to go down sometimes, but they're not going to crash, and they will come back. If you keep some of your money in cash, if you put a lot of money into cash assets, savings accounts, certificates of deposit, things that are insured. You know what? I don't care if the FDIC limits your insurance to $100,000. If you have $100,000 in cash and you're still saving more cash, go open another bank account in another bank. All right? And if you have $190,000, let's say, in cash in one bank, I think you probably have more than you need in cash, but I wouldn't, you know, hack on you for not investing that some other way. But you shouldn't have it in one bank. Put it in two. $90,000 apiece, then you're covered at least if one of the banks takes a bath. And then if one bank closes, you can still get to your money in the other bank. All right? You know, think about the banks you go into. There's reports out there that tell you the ones that are in the biggest trouble right now. Don't put your money in them. Don't buy their stock. If you're holding their stock, dump it. You know, we're going to see a bunch more banks fail. All right, but the biggest thing, you know, is just to understand how everything works. Like a mechanic would tell you, know how your car works. Then you'll notice that it's missing a little bit, and that something needs to be done to service it. All right, so you'll notice that this doesn't feel quite right, and I need to maybe at this point move some money around a little bit. Maybe I'm just, you know, ask yourself the question, like I've said before. If the market goes up and I don't get the gain, is that a bigger threat to me than if the market goes down and I get the loss? All right? Your grandparents didn't have mutual funds. Your grandparents didn't own a lot of stock. They'd buy a little bit of stock here, a little bit of stock there. They had their own diversification plan. They actually had certificates for the stock that they owned. They kept those certificates in a strong box. They understood intrinsic value of investing. All right, and that was the ones that had enough money to invest. Some of them never had enough money to invest. They had money in a mattress, but it was their money. All right, and I'm not saying to go to the extreme, but what I am saying is learn the lesson of our grandparents. All your money shouldn't be in one place, and all your money should not be invested in risk investments, even if you're 22 years old. It's just stupid. It's just nonsense. We risk so much to gain so little in certain situations. All right, don't put 100% of what you can afford to save into tax deferred. Continue to build real savings, money that's liquid. I don't care if it's in mutual funds, I don't care if it's in bonds, I don't care if it's in cash. If you can save 10%, that magic number 10%, but you can't save 11, then damn it, put 8% into tax deferred and 2% into some place you can get your hands on it. All right, even after you have an emergency fund, which should be, folks, 6 to 9 months of survival. All right, and part of what you need to understand is 6 to 9 months is not 6 to 9 months of income. It's after you've done your spending journal and you've red marked everything out and you know what you really need to survive, what you really need to keep your household running. It's that much money. All right, and then it's also, well, even if that happened, even if I lost my job, whatever, could I find a job doing something for some amount of money, and then I only need a portion of it. But just be aware of these things and be aware of how all these economic factors impact your life, but don't live in fear just because the Dow went down 700 points. It's going to go up 200 to 300 points today because, the drop was ridiculous. It was led by fear. If you bailed out yesterday, it wasn't the time to bail out. If you bailed out in March or July or, you know, whatever, that was fine. If you bailed out yesterday, you're probably going to take a beating today because you're going to get back some of what you've lost, but you're not going to be able to do it because you bailed. All right. Yesterday was not the day to panic, so don't panic. Exist outside of the economy, but understand how it works. Now I'm going to define wealth for you, and I want you to calculate your wealth as part of all these exercises. Wealth was best defined by a guy named Buckminster Fuller, who had a patent for a thing called a geodesic dome, actually for some weird reason, because he's just a weird guy, put in his patent application the definition of wealth as he understood it. And the wealth to him was how many days you can survive forward if your income stops. All right? So you might look at a guy with $1 million in cash assets and say he's a lot wealthier than a guy with $100,000. But if the guy with $1 million in cash assets has created a lifestyle that costs him $100,000 a month to sustain, and he's in a position where he can't get out of that now because he's living in a huge house and he's got, you know, big cars and everything else, his wealth is 10 months. If the guy that has $100,000, right, has $10,000 a month in expenses that he can't get out of, he also has 10 months of wealth. The two have an equal amount of wealth. Now, if the guy has $200,000, all right, and he can live on $2,500 a month, all right, he's far more wealthy than the guy with $1 million, especially if he's living the way he wants to live. So that's my challenge to you, is calculate your wealth, and calculate your wealth often, and chart your wealth as it grows. It'll motivate you. You'll start to realize how long. First of all, it'll probably scare the shit out of you, all right? Because the first time you do it, you'll probably go, oh, crap. I've got 3 weeks. I've got 14 days. I've got 2 months. Whatever it is, it won't be much. You'll be like, God damn it, I don't know what to do, right? Well, maybe I'll wake you up, and you'll start to do all these other things. And then, like, 6 months later, when you sit down and go, I had 3 weeks, and now I've got 8. wow, this stuff works. And a year from that point, when you sit down and go, I've got 6 months of wealth now because I've adjusted my lifestyle, I've paid off debt, I've saved more money, I've increased income, I've done all these things, I'm focused on what I'm trying to accomplish now, I know why I'm doing these things, I'm living like my grandparents did, and I feel good and I love my life even though I spend less. Man, you'll be really motivated, and you'll continue to do these things. That's why it's important to gain that focus and charge your wealth. So there's your new definition of wealth. And it, amazingly how it fits into the survival mindset. How long can I survive in my current situation if all my visible means of income went away? All right? Primarily earned income from a job. So if you have income from a business or from, you know, the internet or from royalties or anything you can do to create income that doesn't require you to show up and work or interest from a bank, all right, or anything like that, dividends, what have you, then that gets factored into your wealth coefficient. So factor in, figure out what your wealth is and chart it and watch it grow. You'll realize that it's not about the number alone, that number is only one component of it. It's about the lifestyle, and it's about how you've chosen to live, and it's about how much debt you have. Your debt is evil because it directly impacts your wealth negatively. Every dime of debt you have probably costs you 20 cents of your wealth. All right? And if you look at money invested versus being in debt, a dollar today is worth $4 when you retire. So a dollar of debt today costs you $4 of income at your retirement. You'll start to see debt for what it is, evil, vicious. You'll hate it. You realize it's what's killing our country right now. You don't have to live the way that our country chooses to live. And one last thing as I sign off today I want to talk to you about is what I call the mutual fund scam. Mutual funds are a great investment vehicle. I have money still today in mutual funds that are actually in the stock market. Not all of my money, not the bulk of my money, but some. Because they do have a solid value proposition. And that is that even with a small amount of money, let's say $10,000, I can own 100 different stocks and get the diversification from that. I can go into a specific sector, right, and I can own the solid stocks, and I can look for a fund manager that knows what he's doing, that's done a good job, and that's going to provide me some stability in my investment. All right, here's what I call the scam, though. Because mutual funds have been set up the way they are, because they've been forced into 401ks, because everybody's been lied to and told, just invest for the long haul and don't worry about it, and it always works out in the end, all right. One, we've got old people that are 5 years or less from retirement still sitting in the same mutual funds that they've had for 20 years, which is criminal. And any advisor that keeps them there should probably be locked up, let alone lose his license. If you're 5 years from retirement, get your damn money out of risky investments. Get it out. All right? I can't say it any more clearly. I'm not a financial advisor, but I'll tell you that. When you're close to retirement, if you leave your money too highly leveraged, you're doing a dumbass thing. And any advisor that would tell you to stay put is a liar. All right? He has been trained to keep you in the market because that's what the mutual fund scam is. We've taken a massive amount of money, more than has ever been in the market before, and we've put in the money. So all that money's at risk. But all that money's propping the market up. All right? And that money prevented the stock market yesterday from going into the dirt and not coming back out. Because nobody is going to go in and start liquidating mutual funds right now unless they're really dumb. Right, you should have done that 6 months ago. Today, if you've taken the hit, wait for it. It's going to come back up. All right, we're going to see a rebound today. Whenever you feel that you need to bail, bail. I mean, that's your choice. All right, but by creating these mutual funds, today there's more mutual funds than stocks. Because creating a mutual fund is remarkably simple. You get a good investment manager. You pick out a sector of stocks. Right, you create a portfolio and you start selling shares of the fund. That's it. It's a hell of a lot easier than setting up a company. So all this money's in the market now. It's propping the market up. And I said, if everybody went in and started pulling their money out, it'd be a run on the market, just like a run on the banks. You'd see the market just start boom, 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 down, right? Okay? But by creating this mutual fund system and making people comfortable with it, they've kept more money in the market for a longer period of time than any time in history. And that's given companies a massive amount of money to go out and build their companies with, right? That's what good companies do. But on the other hand, when the company screws that up, it costs a lot more people a lot more money. Your grandparents didn't have mutual funds. And again, I'm not saying you should be out of them, but your grandparents would look at these mutual funds today and go, well, I'll put some money in there, 20%, 30%, 40%, maybe even 50%. But I'm going to keep some of my money in cash. I'm going to keep some of my money in metal. I'm going to keep some of my money in some kind of commodities. Hell, I'm going to put food in the pantry because these people keep raising the price of it. All right? When I was a kid, I worked in a grocery store. I'd have these old ladies come in and complain every time milk went up like 2 cents a gallon. It used to annoy me. I would, like, here's 2 cents. I don't want to hear about it. I didn't do it. Right? I just put the price on. I don't set it. And I don't get the money. Right? And I realized today they were annoying me then, but they were teaching me a valuable lesson. That you pay attention to what's going up in price. And unfortunately, you can't stockpile milk unless you do the powdered milk thing because it'll spoil. But you look at other food substances that you can store. And if they're going up in price faster than the interest rate on your bank account, you're better off buying the food and putting it in the shelf. Especially if you're going to actually eat it. We're not talking about, you know, beef jerky and MREs here. We're talking about food that stores well long term that you're seeing go up in price. Put your money there. Don't completely fall for the mutual fund scam. Don't believe that once you have, you know, a decent savings account set up, you can last for 4 months, that from that point on, all your money goes into mutual funds. All right? That's BS. That's where Dave Ramsey and I disagree a great deal. All right, because especially in a tax-deferred situation where you can't get the money till you're 60 or older, all right? Because you have people that are sitting on $500,000 in a 401k plan that are in danger of losing their house, that are now going to have to pay interest and penalties and taxes to get money out, where if they would have taken out of that $500,000, 100 and kept it into solid cash assets that they could go get whenever they wanted, they wouldn't have to go through that pain, all right? The whole tax-deferred system's a good system, but any system that can be used for good can be used for evil. And in many ways today, this market's being falsely propped up and used for evil. That's something that you need to understand and you need to consider as you're making decisions about where and how to allocate your money. And I know that this podcast today focused a lot on money, but it's the number one means to our survival in the modern age, okay? So when you look at, like, well, how does this fit into typical survival things, like having a garden? Well, gardens save you money. Take the money you save from a garden, you put it into paying down debt or savings. All right? You see, I mean, see how simple that is. Alternative energy sources. If you use things to reduce your electric bill, you take the difference, you put it into investments, savings, or paying down debt. All right? Anything that you can do in the survival world that takes something you buy and turns it into something that you produce, that turns you, remember I talked about home to homestead. If you haven't listened to that podcast, it's a great podcast to listen to that I did on what the difference between a home and a homestead. A home takes from you, a homestead produces for you. You also need to look at yourself. How much am I producing and how much am I consuming? The more you produce and the less you consume, the better. Every time you produce something you don't have to consume with anymore, you keep your wealth home. People talk about local economies, keeping money in the local economy. What's more local than your house? What's more local than your living room? All right? Shouldn't you focus on keeping as much money as you can in the most local economy that you have, which is your personal asset column? Keep as much money as you can inside your local economy, especially your personal local economy. And folks, I think that's a good point to go ahead and wrap today's show up. I hope this one really got you thinking. And I hope you take my challenge. I hope you write the lifestyle you would have if money was not an object. You crystallize it, form it, realize what it really is. You define your real needs. You define your true wants. All right? And I bet you Maserati's not in those true wants. Okay? When it really comes down to it. When you're getting in the practical way. And I hope you journal your expenses. And I hope some of you will share the lifestyle that you would create for yourself on the forum. I think that'll motivate other people. And it'll help people start to work together, form more community, more of a team. And remember to come by our forum. Comment on our forum. Remember to come by the site, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Comment on this episode. Comment on other episodes. I do the best I can to answer everything that I see come in there. You can also email me at jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. Remember to enter our listener appreciation contest. I think we'll cross 800 listeners this week. All right, I don't think we're going to make the October 1 deadline for 1,000 listeners. It's going to be close, but it's probably not going to happen. We're running out of time. Doesn't matter if it's October 15th, October 25th, Halloween, or freaking Thanksgiving. I don't care what it is. We hit 1,000 listeners. Somebody's winning that iPod or $150 worth of silver. It's going to be their choice. So if you haven't joined Listener Appreciation Contest, go by the site, click on Listener Appreciation Contest. Make sure you read the honor statement that says you'll tell other people, and you realize the methods that I ask you to do. Tell at least one other person, and you get a shot at it. And we'll see who wins when that happens. And I got a new contest coming after that one's done that's going to be even cooler. Again, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. Today, really helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they are.
You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.